The BBC presents Guilty Party. A problem in crime detection in which you are invited to match your wits with a panel of experts. John Arlott, F.R. Buckley, and Robert Fabian. First, you'll hear the crime play, The Diving Statue. From the various clues given in the play, the panel will decide on a line of investigation to find the guilty party. They'll then cross-examine the suspects, who give unscripted answers to their questions. But first of all, here's Joe McCready, private investigator.
Inspector Galloway and I had been to a civic luncheon at a small town some 50 miles from London. It was to honor the retiring police chief, who was an old pal of Galloway's. We started back to town about 7:30 of a dank, misty winter's evening, when our headlights picked out a figure on the road. He was waving us down. We recognized him immediately.
It's that chap who presented the big check at the luncheon today. What was his name? Jarvis. Charlie Jarvis. Anything wrong, Mr. Jarvis?
Who's there? Who is it then?
Inspector Galloway. This is Mr. McCready. Remember, we met at the luncheon.
Oh, yes.
We were introduced by Bill Ambler.
The Scotland Yard man and the private investigator. Mm. Oh, you two couldn't have come along at a better time. This job might be right up your street. Would you mind running me back up to my house up on the top of the hill there as quick as you can? Well, I think maybe you'll find you've got a case on your hands.
Jump in and tell us about it on the way.
Oh, thanks. Drive straight on for about 1/4 mile and then you'll see the gates of my drive on the left.
What makes you think there's something wrong?
Well, I heard a crash and it came up from near my house. It's a quiet night and no traffic's about and I heard it distinctly. And then I looked up towards my swimming bath and the light came on for a brief instant. And then it went off again.
Your swimming bath?
Yes. Haven't you seen it in the newspapers? Charlie Jarvis built a new indoor swimming bath in his grounds. Grand opening ceremony tomorrow.
We're not resident around here.
It'll be quite a big affair. Everybody will be there. You see, every Tombley Canary's got an outdoor swimming pool, but mine's indoors. Heated water. Winter and summer bathing alike.
But what do you think can have happened in this wonderful new swimming bath?
Sabotage for revenge. That's what. I've got enemies, you know. Any self-made man who's got on makes enemies. Oh, it's about 150 yards along on the lift. Keep your eyes skinned in case anybody's about. They can't have got far, whoever they are.
First time I ever heard of anybody sabotaging a swimming bath. How do you go about it?
You'll see. Ah, here we are. Quick now. Ah, see?
What?
Those swing doors at the entrance, they were locked. They've been forced.
Let's see. Torch, Joe. Easy enough job to force them. Only one of the doors is bolted on the inside. You've only got the actual lock holding them, and with swing doors, that's easily bust.
Well, let's see what's inside. Get some light on the scene. Just as I thought.
Good Lord. What a mess.
What's happened to the water?
Oh, it was drained late this afternoon. Something wrong with the purifying plant. Too much chlorine in the water. The engineers are fixing it first thing in the morning.
I gather the sabotage has something to do with that pile of marble in the bottom of the swimming bath. It looks like a statue, or what remains of one.
It was one of the most beautiful marble statues you ever saw. Exquisite. Now look at it. Somebody's going to pay for this, and I have a good idea who it'll be.
What was it, a nude?
Yes, a lovely female nude, perfectly sculptured.
From the bits and pieces that I left, she must have been a girl with plenty of figure. Definitely in the modern Italian tradition.
Anne-Marie, delightful girl. Married to an old fool of a professor up at the college.
A local woman?
Yes, and I may say, gentlemen, the only woman I ever cared twopence about. She could have married me and lived in the lap of luxury, short of nothing. And I've made my pile, building contracting, you know. Ah, to think of it, married to old Gregory Starling. Why, all he's got in the world is his teacher's salary and a penny for royalties from some dry old textbooks that nobody reads.
As I see it, the statue was standing at the deep end of the bath on a heavy marble pedestal.
Had to be heavy. The statue was life-size, you see. It was stood on the edge of the bath, looking from the deep end to the shallow. It was the piece de resistance of the old building. And now look at it.
Somebody shoved it into the deep end. It must have taken a nosedive 12 feet or so to the bottom of the pool.
And you actually heard the crash 1/4 mile or more away?
Yes. The engineer finished draining the bath about 6:30, and then he came up to the house, and, well, we had a few drinks, and as I wanted a bit of exercise before me dinner, I got him to drop me down in the village in his car, meaning to walk back, you know. I wanted some cigarettes from the pub any road. So he dropped me just this side of the village, and I was walking to the pub when I heard the crash. I started to run back, and then I heard your car come in.
Maybe I'm naive, but isn't it unusual for a professor's wife to pose in the nude for a piece of sculpture that's going to adorn a private swimming bath in the same neighborhood?
Well, that was the joy of the whole thing. Old Stalin was going mad with rage about it. But if it was him who's done it, he'll suffer.
Did Professor Starling know she'd been posing for the statue?
Oh, she posed for it before she met him. When she was keen on a young sculptor, a chap named Baxter. Yes, Roland Baxter. Ah. Funny thing, he's been to see me today. He wanted to buy it back from me. Some hoax. Yeah, I have the devil's own job to get it from him, you know. Left the neighborhood and he took it up north with him.
And you bought it specially to display it in your swimming bath for the edification of the local gentry?
Well, why not?
Oh, nothing. Was it insured?
Yes, for £1,000. You know, I had a feeling somebody might make an attempt to do this sort of thing. You see, as far as I can make out, Professor Stalin and young Anne-Marie and Roland Baxter, they'd all be glad that this has happened.
Well, maybe, maybe not. Perhaps you'd better tell us where we can find them. Then we'll have a chat with them. Let's have a talk with Mrs. Starling.
Anne-Marie, you mean?
Yes.
Ah, now maybe that would be rewarding. From what's left of the statue, she should be worth a visit.
Try keeping your mind on crime, will you? See you later, Mr. Jarvis. Tell us the address and we'll visit the Starlings. In the meantime, we'll leave you to pick up the, pieces de resistance.
Professor Starling and his wife lived in a neat, half-timbered cottage not far from the college. Mrs. Starling, Anne-Marie, that is, opened the door for us. She must have been on a reducing diet since she posed for the statue. But if what was left of the sculpture was intriguing, so was what was left of Anne-Marie.
Won't you come in, gentlemen? My husband's working upstairs marking exam papers. In here.
Have you been in all the evening, Mrs. Starling?
Why, no. As a matter of fact, I've only just come in. I went out to meet a friend. An old friend.
Roland Baxter?
Why, yes, but has anything happened to him? How do you know?
He made a life-size statue of you, and Mr. Jarvis bought it for his rather vulgar indoor swimming pool.
About a half an hour ago, somebody sabotaged your statue. Smashed it. It won't embarrass anybody anymore.
But I don't understand. Who did it, Roland?
We're trying to find out.
Whoever it was. God bless him.
We're not sure it was a him.
Oh, but what woman would have bothered to... You don't mean me. Oh, no, that statue must have weighed half a ton. I couldn't have moved it an inch. Oh, be sensible.
Did your husband leave the house at all?
Well, he went up to see Mr. Jarvis to make a last desperate attempt to make him change his mind.
Did he now? What time?
Oh, about 4:30. He's not been out since, unless he went while I was out.
What time is that?
Oh, between about 7:30 and 8:00.
Did he speak to you at all about the result of his visit to Jarvis?
No, he came back at 4:45. He just looked thoroughly upset, shook his head at me, and went straight upstairs to work. There's been no sense as far as I know.
He was really upset, was he?
Oh, terribly. But I wasn't nearly so worried as he was. Matter of fact, it was a beautiful piece of sculpture. Flattering, too. Poor Gregory couldn't see it that way. He was talking of resigning and leaving the district.
You say you met Mr. Baxter. Where?
The corner of Beechwood Lane.
What time?
Well, I said I'd meet him at 7:30. But he thought our appointment was at 7:45.
He was late then?
Just a bit.
You didn't stay long with him?
No. It didn't take me long to give him his answer.
And what was that?
A very firm no. He wanted to resume our affair where we left off 2 years ago. Cheek. A mere married woman. And after he'd sworn he'd never sell my statue. Then he sold it to Gregory's worst enemy. They hate each other.
You say you left here at 7:30. But you were supposed to be at the corner of Beechwood Lane at 7:30.
Oh, well, it's only 2 minutes away from here. And I wanted him to be there first. I didn't want to wait about on a corner. I'm a college professor's wife, remember.
Have you seen Mr. Jarvis's swimming bath?
Yes. I went over this morning to try and persuade him to get rid of the statue. He just laughed at me. I could have killed him. So could Gregory, I expect, when he went this afternoon. One day somebody will kill the old goat. I'd a jolly good job, too.
Thank you, Mrs. Starling. Now, perhaps, we could have a word with your husband. To come straight to the point, Professor, we're trying to discover who has sabotaged Mr. Jarvis's statue.
Gentlemen, you're joking. You don't mean that it's been damaged.
Smashed.
Praise be to heaven. What a wonderful thing to happen.
Any idea who might have done it?
No.
Have you been out tonight at all?
Not since I left Jarvis at 5:00. I tried to buy the statue from him, but of course he refused. He wanted to gloat. You see, I married Anne-Marie when he thought all he had to do was open his checkbook and buy her.
This statue business was just personal spite and malice?
Exactly. Do you know, he'd even offered the college authorities the use of his swimming bath for the boys twice a week. Imagine my position. Those young devils leering at my wife.
And didn't you feel like smashing it? Or him?
Oh, yes. But he warned me that he had photographs of the statue. And if anything happened to it, or to him, he'd send it all to the local papers with the story. Good heavens. He can still do that.
We'll see. But you haven't been out at all since 5 o'clock.
No, marking exam papers ever since.
Your wife been out?
Anne-Marie? Why, no. Why should she go out?
Just wondered.
No, we have a meal about 8:30. She'd be preparing it.
That's a nice piece of sculpture, that bust. Famous old Greek or something?
Oh, yes, my subject, mathematics and mechanics. The sciences, so to speak. Here's my hero, that chap there.
Who is it? Euclid?
No, Archimedes.
Ah, yes, yes, Archimedes, of course. Wasn't he the chap who said Eureka?
He was indeed.
He said something else, too.
Yes?
Yes, he said, give me but one firm spot on which to stand, and I will move the earth.
Education is a wonderful thing. Even private investigators and policemen find use for it. Astounding.
And talking of finding things, let's go and find Mr. Roland Baxter, shall we?
Mr. Baxter? Treat him gently, please. He breaks easily.
We found Roland Baxter at the best hotel in town. We'd already seen him earlier in the day before we went to the luncheon. He was easy to pick out in a crowd. I don't know why. It could have been his black spade-shaped beard and monocle, or possibly his orange beret and his green sandals. Whatever it was, he stood out as something a little different from the common run.
Sorry to trouble you, Mr. Baxter.
But, my dear Inspector, nothing is too much trouble if it means assisting the police.
Thank you. Did you know that your statue of Mrs. Starling had been mutilated beyond recognition?
Such an act of vandalism was almost certain to happen. As an artist, I regret the death of one of my works. As an individual, I'm glad for Mrs. Starling's sake and her husband's.
You have no feelings about Mr. Jarvis in the circumstances?
I have a great many feelings about Mr. Jarvis in the circumstances. I hope this will upset him very much indeed.
Mrs. Starling says that you swore you'd never sell the statue.
I did, but I fell on hard times, and the offer from Jarvis was fabulous. £500.
I gathered that Professor Starling would have paid a large sum for it.
Yes, but only so that he could destroy it. No artist could possibly agree to that. I was proud of that statue. And very much in love with the subject, I may add.
You met her tonight, I gather?
She told you? Yes, at 7:45, corner of Beechwood Lane.
And Mr. Baxter, why did you come here today?
Well, 2 days ago, I inherited £4,000. I travelled down here overnight to see Jarvis immediately and try and buy the statue back again. He refused to sell.
Did he show you his swimming bath?
He did. You see, I had no idea of the hateful trick he was playing on the Starlings. I sold the statue in good faith through my agent. As soon as Jarvis refused to sell, that was about 11 o'clock this morning, I went and told Anne-Marie and the professor everything. That's all I know. I'd have left earlier, but I wanted to talk in private with Anne-Marie.
Thank you, Mr. Baxter. You've been most helpful. All right, Joe. I think we've got all we want now. Yes, I think so.
Well, listeners and members of the panel, there is the problem. And now, Edward J. Mason, who wrote the play, will introduce his suspects.
And the suspects in this particular case are, of course, Charlie Jarvis, the rather unpleasant owner of the swimming pool, Professor Starling, the college teacher, his wife, Anne-Marie Starling, former artist model, and Roland Baxter, the sculptor who fell in love with his subject. Now, I'll hand these over to you, John Arlott, and let's see if you and your panel of experts can decide who is the guilty party.
Good enough, and I think the first suspect we ought to talk to is Charlie Jarvis, if we could have him up, please. Now, you had visits during the day. You had visits from Professor Starling and Roland Baxter.
Yes, indeed.
Did either of those two know that the bath was going to be emptied?
Well, I didn't tell them. No, not as far as I know, they didn't know.
Didn't they notice the smell of chlorine? You said it was over
there. Well, I couldn't say, gentlemen. I don't know whether they went in the bath. They came to the house to see me.
Oh. Tell me one thing, Mr. Jarvis. I'm sure this very complete pool of yours had a diving board, didn't it? The deep end must have...
Well, there is a small board alongside. There isn't a stand at the moment.
There isn't a diving
stand? There isn't
stand.
A stand, no. There's a board. There's a spring board at the side.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that was the center. That was the piece of resistance. This statue in the middle.
Right on the edge, was it?
Well, within about probably 6 inches, almost.
Yes. Now, this is life-size. And yes, it's on a plinth.
Yes.
Could an ordinary person, standing on the highest available point, whether a diving board or anything else near at hand, push statue, plinth, and all over? Or do you think they'd have to put a lever underneath?
Well, from my past experience, gentlemen, of building, I should say that they'd have to probably leave it. It's possible, of course, they might have rocked it until it went in, but if I was doing it, I should get a lever under it.
Have you got photographs of this statue?
I have indeed.
And did you tell anybody that if anything happened to it, you would have them put in the paper?
Yes, I think I told Stalin that if there was any giggity-pokery, I should publish the...
I would say it would be no good him smashing the statue because he could expect you to put these photographs in the paper.
That's the only reason I have the photographs, Duke, gentlemen.
Good enough. Well, now let's turn, if we may, to Professor Stalin. Professor, you went out to see Mr. Jarvis at what time?
About 4:30.
And you got back at what time?
Well, just before 5, I should think it would be.
But you made this 4:45 that you were back. Was your wife in when you came back?
Yes.
If your wife had gone out afterwards, that's to say, between 7:30 and 8:00, would you have known?
No, it's unlikely. I was working in my room.
And you would expect you would be cooking in the kitchen, wouldn't you?
Indeed.
Would your wife know if you went in or out from upstairs?
Yes, I think she would. Yes, I would have to come downstairs, and naturally she would hear the front door.
No backstairs in your house?
No.
Are you a student of Archimedes and the stresses and strains and that?
Yes, I know a certain amount.
Leverage, fulcrums, and things like that?
Yes, well...
Mechanics, generally.
Yes, I know something about it, naturally.
Does your wife know about it?
Yes, she would know a certain amount.
Well, let's put the cards on the table, Professor. Did you smash this statue?
I did not. As you must realize, there would have been absolutely no point in it if this wretched man has these photographs. Smashing the statue does nothing.
Good enough, Professor. I wonder if we could talk to Mrs. Starling now.
Certainly, I'll call her.
Mrs. Starling, are you satisfied that your husband was in the house when you left it at about 7:30?
Yes, he was upstairs marking the papers. Well, he goes there every evening.
You're quite sure that nobody could come down those stairs without your hearing him?
No, I'm pretty sure nobody could come down the stairs without my hearing
him. He could slide down the banister.
Well, he could if he wished to try, yes.
Anything being going on in your house?
No.
No ladders out of the window?
No ladders at all, no.
Now, are you equally satisfied that he was in when you returned?
Yes.
How long do you suppose you were gone altogether? You left, you say, precisely at 7:30 in order not to be early for the appointment? You didn't see Baxter until 7:45. What time do you suppose you got back?
Oh, I was back about 8:00, or just before. Perhaps about, you know,
You were gone 25 minutes.
Yes, about 25 minutes.
That's long enough for somebody to get from your house to Jarvis's swimming bath, be 3 minutes there and get back, does it?
I suppose it would be, yes. They'd have to be pretty quick about it, though.
Yes, whether for you or your husband. If your husband went, then you will assume, will you, that he left the house after you did and returned before you did?
Yes, I will.
You're satisfied he didn't leave the house before you went out nor return to it after you came back?
Yes, I am satisfied.
Which direction did Baxter come from when you met him?
He came from the direction of the village.
Is that the direction of Jarvis's house?
No, it's the opposite direction.
So they wouldn't meet, did they?
No.
You don't think he'd been to Jarvis's house then?
No, I don't think so.
Where do you think he'd been then, earlier in the evening?
Well, I think he said something, I don't know, about having a drink or something, but I wouldn't really know.
In the hotel, probably.
Yes, I expect so.
Your husband told us he'd been a runner in his early days. He still seems physically fit. Has he ever done any running to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Yeah.
When your husband came back, he didn't tell you, in actual words, that this fellow wouldn't sell the, or wouldn't do anything about it? The statue was going to be there and that was that.
He didn't say a word about it. He just sort of walked into the house and he looked terribly downcast and miserable.
Did you presume by that then that the statue was going to be there?
Naturally, because, I mean, if it wasn't, he would surely have...
You're fond of your husband?
Very fond of him.
Good enough, Mrs. Starling. Now I wonder if we could talk to Roland Baxter. Mr. Baxter, you saw the statue in position at the deep end of the bath?
Yes, I did. I saw Mr. Jarvis in the bath.
Was it secure? As far as you... Did you touch the statue?
No, I didn't touch it. It seemed... secure enough, yes. It was standing at the deep end of the bath there, quite firmly near the edge of the swimming bath.
Did you see any builder's tools lying near it?
There were some, yes.
There were. Where were you before you saw Mrs. Starling at the second appointment, the evening one?
Well, I took an early dinner at my hotel, and then I... Yes, I went into the barn, had a game of darts with some of the locals there.
Why were you late?
Well, I don't think I was late. The appointment was for 7:45.
Look here, there's one point that rather bothered me about your interrogatory with the other officers. They said to you the statue had been mutilated beyond recognition. Now, that might easily have meant somebody painted a moustache on it, mightn't it?
Well, no, the very word mutilate, it suggests to me that it had been disfigured very badly in some
yes,
way.
Yes, but you assumed it was the death of this work of art. In other words, you seem to assume that it had been utterly destroyed.
Well, mutilated beyond recognition would suggest that it had been very badly damaged.
Yes.
I need to assume that.
Well, now, we've got the producer's signal that that's the end of our questioning, so we must return you, Mr. Baxter, and your fellow suspects to Ted Mason.
Thank you.
And while John Arlott and his panel of experts deliberate about the guilty party in this case, I'll run through the suspects just once more for the benefit of you people at home. First, we had Charlie Jarvis, the owner of the statue and of the swimming pool, who had an insurance motive. Perhaps Professor Starling, who had a strong motive for destroying the statue, but in view of the photographs that had been taken, it wouldn't have done him very much good if he had destroyed the statue. Not on the face of it. And Mrs. Starling, who said she didn't really mind people looking at her in that particular statuesque form. In fact, she was rather proud of it. She might have had a motive because of her love for her husband and her regard for his position in the small town and in the college. And Roland Baxter, who, well, his only motive would be an altruistic one of trying to save embarrassment to his former girlfriend and her husband. There they are, the four of them. One of them did make a mistake, and it's up to John Arlott now to come in and tell us which one. Who, John Arlott, is the guilty party?
Well, now, let me try to answer this question because we're divided on it. And let me say, first of all, that I'm sure you put a clue in here which we have all missed. So, let's start from the left. Bob thinks Professor Starling, and I think this is a good policeman argument, because Charlie Jarvis wants to preserve a rarity that he has bought, paid for. He can hit Professor Starling with it. It's a priceless possession. It's beautiful. He's every reason for keeping it. Buck thinks Baxter. I think he takes Baxter on the basis that he was doing Jarvis £500 worth of damage and he was destroying something that he wanted himself and couldn't have, that he was piqued by Jarvis and he was piqued by Mrs. Starling. Now, I'm going, on my part, only on half a clue. I could understand people confusing an appointment between, say, 7:15 and 7:30. Or something like that. But I don't see that two normal people can make the mistake between 7:30 and 7:45, because the two times are really different. So the only weakness I can see in the stories of all the suspects is the difference between 7:30 and 7:45. That involves two people, Baxter and Mrs. Starling. Now, Baxter, it seems to me, is alibied completely through the time that the bump took place. Therefore, with the aid of levers, which she understood from her husband's instruction, I'm going to go on Mrs. Starling.
Well, gentlemen, would you like to place those three suspects in order, 1, 2, 3, or would you just like to give odds on each of them?
I think we've each backed our own favourite, Ted. I'm sure we've missed a clue. Come on, put us out of our misery.
Look for trouble.
Well, whoever did this damage did it after the bath was emptied, because to have toppled over the statue into a full bath wouldn't have damaged it at all.
Yeah.
Therefore, since neither of the detectives said specifically how the statue was damaged,
only the person who did it, plus Jarvis himself, who saw it with the detectives afterwards, would know that the damage had been done by tipping the statue into the deep end of an empty bath. Baxter had an alibi, as you said. Professor Starling, as far as I'm concerned, wouldn't have done it because he'd been warned that if he did, the local newspapers would be given the story and photographs. So that leaves Jarvis and Mrs. Starling. Now, who made a mistake? Mrs. Starling did, because although she hadn't been told, she knew how the damage had been done, because she said these words.
You don't mean me. Oh, no, that statue must have weighed half a ton. I couldn't have moved it an inch.
Therefore, she knew how it had been done. Otherwise, it could easily have been mutilated by bashing it with something, you see. She went along early at about 7:15. She saw our friend Jarvis and the engineer depart by car. She went and broke the doors in, meaning to damage the statue with anything that was lying around. But she switched the light on, and of course, on that occasion, Jarvis didn't see it switched on because he was walking towards the village. And seeing the lie of the land and that the bath was empty, she then used her knowledge of Archimedes' principles of levers, which I've plugged pretty hard for you, and tipped the statue into the bath. She deliberately told the detectives that her appointment with Baxter, as you said, was at 7:30, when in fact it was at 7:45, so that there was a time lapse for him to be a suspect in the case instead of herself. I think I'll give you 75% marks there. One of you did get it, but you missed a very vital clue.
John Arlott, F.R. Buckley, and Robert Fabian were the panel in The Diving Statue, a problem in crime detection from the BBC series Guilty Party. The play was written by Edward J. Mason and the program produced by Tony Schreiben.